Accession number 10012, reel number 3.
Mr. George Clayton, reel 3. You say you went from King's Cross to Whitehall.
Yes.
What happened when you arrived at Whitehall?
Well, there may have been someone there to direct us or lead us to where the barracks were. We were accommodated overnight there, and then we were given a breakfast.
Were you signed on yet properly? Did you have to sign
on? No, we had to sign on the next morning. We were medically examined there by an army doctor. And when it came to my turn, well, it was a walkover for me. He asked us if I had any troubles of any kind, like any diseases, but I could honestly say I'd never been troubled. The only thing I'd ever had, I think, was scarlet fever. I remember having that as a young boy. It was pretty frequent, these fevers were, and measles, but I could never say I'd had measles, but I'd had scarlet fever, but that didn't seem to matter much anyhow. And it wasn't long before I was passed that I was pronounced fit for the army. Well, it came to me friend's turn, this Ralph Curry, you see, he was a chap that was friend with me. And, well, when it came to his turn, the medical officer, he rejected him. He says, "Have you ever had rheumatic fever?" And he says, "Yes." He says, "I had rheumatic fever when I was a boy." "Oh, well," he says, "I cannot take you for the army." So when I got, he was after me, and when I got to know that he couldn't be rejected for the army, I went to see an officer, and I said, "Look here," says, "this chap and me is mates, and it's an understanding that if one's rejected, the other won't go." "Oh," he says, "I'll see about that." So he went to the doctor and he says, "Look here, doctor," he says, "there's a man here, the one you've rejected is a pal of his, and there's a sort of an understanding that if you don't get one, you don't get the other if you're rejected." "Well," he says, "I'm sorry, but," he says, "I cannot take him." He says, "if there's a shell dropped at his feet," he says, the possibility will be that he'll be dead, even though he's not injured by the shell. The shock would kill him. So, anyhow, I told the officer, I says, "Well, if you cannot get him, if he cannot go with him, you kind of get me."
What did your brother say about this?
Oh, my brother hadn't much to do about that arrangement, but however, they passed him, and, I saw him go away along with the others that had passed, and I says to Rav Coy, "there was something come over me, I don't know what it was, was seeing him march away." "Well," I says, "Rav, I says, my brother's gone," I says, "I'll have to go." So he says, "Well," he says, it's a matter with you, that is. And so anyhow, I told the officer, I said, if I can't go with me brother, then I'm not going at all. I want to be back. That was the arrangement we've made. So anyhow, he told him that he couldn't take this mate of mine. But after I'd seen me brother go, I told me friend, I says, "I'll have to go, Ralph." I says, "there was something of seeing him leave that appealed to me, and it's a thing I'd never expected or anticipated. And to see him go and march away, and me not to be marched away, it took a hold of him." I says, "Well, I'll have to go." So I went and saw an officer, and he told us that he couldn't get us away. But I said I was all prepared to go. He clapped us on the back. He says, "You're a good lad." He says, "You go away." So, so I went with the next contingent to Chatham. That was the Royal Engineers Depot.
That was the unit you joined, the Royal Engineers. Did you realise you were joining the Royal Engineers?
Oh, yes, we knew we were going to join the Royal Engineers Regiment.
Right from the start?
Yes.
Had you actually signed on while you were at Whitehall?
We didn't sign on till we got the medical examination.
And then you signed on after
that?
Then
we signed on,
after
you see.
Agreed.
And I think, there was an officer came and he gave us all a gold half sovereign. Well, that's the last gold coin I can remember ever possessing. And what I did with, what we did with it in France, I can never remember. Many a time I've wondered, what did I do with that gold sovereign when we got it to France? But I must have been able to spend it somehow, though, because it certainly never came back with me. But many a time I've wondered how I went about it, do you see? But I must have got an exchange somewhere or other in French currency when I got overseas. Yeah.
What happened when you got to Chatham?
Well, we were there.
Did you join the other?
Yes, I was put into the same tent. Really, we were put into a marquee tent there.
Were you part? You were part of the Royal Engineers, but were you part? Did they give you any other unit title? A company title or anything?
We joined the. Eventually.
So at that time you weren't part of. You were just, as far as you knew, you were just part of the Royal Engineers.
Part of the Royal Engineers. We were going away as tunnellers. It was tunnellers that they wanted. Do you see?
What accommodation did they provide you with at Chatham?
At Chatham, we were in Marquees. Tents, because the first night we were there, there was a Zeppelin came over, and you know when the Zeppelin came over, well, the anti-aircraft guns opened out, and these guns was firing, you know, but it was a very humorous fellow, one of the miners that went with us, Joshie Anderson, they called him, and he says, these bombs is... these tents are bomb-proof, he says. You're perfectly safe in these, he says. If he drops a bomb on these, he says the bomb will stop back. But that was just his talk, like.
Were you just sleeping on the ground?
Yes. I think we were issued with a blanket and a ground sheet. A ground sheet's a waterproof sheet, and we put the blanket down there and wrapped ourselves with it. I think we just slept on the bottom, yes.
Now, one point I missed out, it's entirely my fault. What month was it you joined in 1915? Was it June?
It was in June, yes. Early June, yes.
So?
And a fortnight after I left me work on the collieries, I was on the front line of trenches in the Ypres salient.
Right. Now, at Chatham, did they give you a... You had this accommodation. What was the food like they gave you while you were at Chatham?
Well, I remember the first meal we had was bread and cheese. We got a meal, I think, with me. There was some vegetables, stew as they called it. That was always your dinner, stew. That's what we got at Chatham, yes.
Did they kit you out there?
Did they what?
Kit you out, give you a uniform and kit.
Well, we got what we called a mess tin. It was a sort of a semicircular tin, and you had to go up there to the cuckoo's, and he had a big Dixie and a ladle, and you went up to him, and he got a ladle full, and he put it into your Dixie can. Well, you had to get away to where you could get a seat, and you could have it there. That's the way... The fetters, but it was usually after that it was a bread and cheese meal they got. You got a lot of cheese in the army.
What kit did you get there? What other kit besides your Dixie? What kit and uniform did they give you?
Oh, we got a rifle and bayonet and 50 rounds of ammunition. We had there wasn't tin hats in that time. But we got a service uniform that that was applicable to the oil engineers, and within a fortnight.
What training did you do? Were you training just the what was left of the 30? Were there other people?
Oh, there wasn't time to do any training. We had to get. They wanted us there as quickly as possible.
So what were you doing during these 2 weeks at Chatham?
Yeah. Yes.
You were only there how long then?
Well, I think 2 or 3 days would take it up, but what would the...
You had no training there at all then?
No training at Chatham.
No infantry training at
all? No. We may have done a... march in step or something like that, but practically there wasn't the time.
You weren't trained how to use this rifle and bayonet at all?
No, we were never trained to use the rifle and bayonet.
So where did you go from Chatham?
We went to Southampton, and we got the train there, and I can remember that we played down there with the Royal Engineers band. Not a good military band, the Royal Engineers, and we were played to the railway station.
This was just your draft from the Stanley Collieries. It wasn't anybody else, was it? Or did you join some other people then?
Oh, I think there'll be some. Oh, yes, there was more, because there were 600 of us left Chatham. There was miners from Wales, there was miners from Scotland, there was miners from, Nuneaton and... all the coal fields had been notices put out, you know, wanting volunteers to go abroad. And there were from Scottish and Welsh miners and Yorkshire miners, Staffordshire miners, from all the coal fields, yes.
So
there were 600 of us left Chatham to go to Southampton to get the boat there. And we sailed from Southampton to Lee Havre. We didn't know where we were going to when we left. When we left Chatham,
but you knew you'd be tunneling.
Eh?
You knew you'd be tunneling.
Oh yes, we knew we'd be tunneling, they didn't tell us where we were going to. Any other than we were told to parade to get together, and they got us. I remember the Royal Engineers band playing us. Till we got into, we didn't know where we were going, but when we got to the rail station, of course, there's a train came in at Chatham, and we didn't know when we were going to when we left Chatham. We didn't know. We had a good idea. We had the only imagination that we were going. We really didn't know where we were going, but. But we found out where what a good idea where we were going to when we got to Southampton, because that was the train that we got off at. And I can remember when we left Chatham, the Guards band played "Auld Lang Syne." I remember that. Yes. Well, when we got to Southampton. I think we got straight onto the boat. Yes, away from we did. We straight onto the boat. There was no halt at Southampton. And, we didn't know where we were going, but when we got through the narrow ways of the Isle of Wight, when you leave to go to France, we were all told to get down below. No man was to be on deck. And we were bundled in there with our great active service kit, our rifles and bayonets and all our full active service kit, you know. But we had to stop down there until we got to Lee Havre. Well, at Lee Havre it was dark when we landed there. I think it was about 10 o'clock at night when we got to Lee Havre. But the marches away from there up a hill up to a camp where these bell tents, and we slept in there for the first night. Then the next morning we were parade it together again and had to march through Le Havre. Well, there was a...
Did the French respond at all as you marched through?
Did they what?
Did they sort of cheer you or did they ignore you? What did the French do as you were marching about?
Oh, when they saw we marching, they always gave us a wave, the bystanders, but the man that had the march through was lead us through Le Havre. He was a new officer. He was like us. He'd evidently been a colliery manager. His name was Lum, Lieutenant Lum. And he was the man that had to lead us through Le Havre so we got to where the train was that was going to... It was a cattle truck, such as it was. It wasn't a train. It was just what the conveyed the cattle in. And we had to go into there, but he couldn't find his way very well. And I remember there was a funeral coming where the road were marching along shortly after we left Le Havre rail station. And he didn't know what to do. But however, he seemed to think it would be a good idea if he turned left and got behind the street where this funeral was coming. So he marched around there, do you see, and the funeral comes straight on. That was the way. He didn't know what to do. He didn't know whether he had to eyes right or he had to stop or what to march on. But anyway, that's the way he got out of that. Lum, he was he was officer in France when we started mining. We had him as well.
Well, we'll come to that. So yes. You got to the station and you were put in cattle trucks, you say?
Yes, and they conveyed us to a good way. We halted in a place where there was a farm or two.
What was the journey like?
Eh?
What was the journey like in the cattle trucks?
Oh, it wasn't very pleasant. You could sit down and... But we're crowded, you know. It's not as comfortable as what the carriages was, but that's the way they conveyed us anyway, in these cattle trucks. But, we got so far that way, and then we had to dismount, get out there, and there was some farms where they put us sleeping that hay sheds, you know, and we had to sleep among the hay. That's the way we put our first night in. Then the next morning, I think there was we had to get on the march and marched for 2 or 3 days. We got near to the line, and when we got,
did you find that difficult?
Eh?
Marching with your kit must have been quite hard work.
Oh yes, it's hard work with full kit, but there was, well, there was men older than me, but if you did fall out, there was a lorry, I think, would pick you up, you know, but you didn't get any medals if you weren't able to march. Well, I can never say it was much of a problem to me. I was going to always complete me marching, and yes.
So where were you marching towards? Up into the Ypres?
Well, we were marching up towards the Ypres salient, and as we got further on, before we got there, we halted in a place named Popperinge. Popperinge, you maybe heard about that. And we spent the night there in... I think the place we were sleeping in had been a sugar refinery. I remember it had a cement floor, and it was very, very hard and very cool, sleeping on the cement. That's the worst thing I think I ever slept on, cement. I've slept on the ground and on the grass and among hay and hurricanes, but cement's a thing that it never seemed to warm. You couldn't warm it. But anyway, we...
Was it still all 600 together, or had you been split into smaller drafts? Or were you all together still?
Oh, we all kept together, all this. Well, there was some of us scattered about, but there was some NCOs, they knew where they were billeted, you know, and they got all together. And as I said, it took us as far as they could with the cattle trucks. Then after that, we had to walk.
After the night in the sugar refinery, the old sugar refinery, Poppering, where did you go from there?
Well, we hunted in Poppering's Flamertinge, it was, Flamertinge, that was further near the lane from Poppering. We went to Flamertinge, that's where we halted. There was some dugouts constructed there, the sandbags at the side and some corrugated iron over the top. And we were put into there to sleep till the next morning. Well, the next morning, I think that's where that was what depot, really, this Flamertinge.
A Royal Engineers depot.
Well, we walked from there. You could hear the guns there. You could hear the guns, and occasionally you got a shell over as well. Shell or two, long-range guns, you know. But we had a man or two killed with a shell from a German shell at Flamertinge.
Well, that's where you worked from, is it?
That was what depot were, yes.
Were you joining... Is this where you joined the 175th Tunnelling Company?
I would have spent what?
Was this where you joined the 175th Tunnelling Company?
Well, I would say that was formed, yes. That was formed in Flamertinge.
And how many were you in that company?
I would think there would be 600. 600 then. That number, what we were about 30 from the Southmore group. But what with the Welsh miners and Staffordshire miners and Scottish miners, the numbers were swelled to 600.
How were you organised as a company? What offices did you have?
Well, we had there was a major, what was it called, the major then? He was the commanding officer. Connor, I think, was his name. And then there was captains, and there was lieutenants and second lieutenants. The captain was in charge of a company. You see, we were split into companies.
And how many men would there be in a company?
Well, I would say there would be 200.
There were 200 of you in 175 Tunnelling Company?
Yeah, 175 Tunnelling Company, yes.
Who was your officer in 175?
There was an officer named... Castles, another one named Lum, and another one named Johnny Warnock. I became a batman to him.
No. And had Greener joined 175 by then?
Had
Martin Greener joined the company by then?
No, not by then. Martin Greener came in later on. He was an infantryman.
That's right.
And I think with him, he would probably have his mining tickets, and because he got a manager's job when he left the army, I know that.
So, you were formed into 175 Tunnelling Group. Was it split up any further into platoons, or was it just...
Well, no, I think we were all in the 175 company. I don't know much there was... Platoons. There was
who were your NCOs? How were they appointed, or were men made NCOs, senior miners?
Well, there was some men made NCOs on the job, especially if you were Freemason. And
what makes you say that?
Well, because there was a one named Charlie Demon. He was a Freemason, and he came from Northumberland, on about Seaton Delaville, I think he was from. And Charlie was made a sergeant. We put three stripes onto him. And, he got a big step. But It was due to he never been in the army before, and his training was what he'd received between being sworn in London and arriving in Flamatinge.
Were there any others that you thought were promoted to sergeant or NCO just because they were Masons?
No, there was some that had maybe been territorials or some of that. They were made NCOs. And then we progressed away from there, but that's where we started from. I remember Charlie Demon was one of the first sergeants we had, and it was really due to the fact that he was a Freemason. I know, in fact, I saw more of what Freemasons can do and what Freemasons does do in the army than I've ever seen either before or since.
What do you mean? But can you explain?
Well, in the army, if you're a Freemason, you're one of the lads. And I noticed that I became a batman to the officers, and one time I walked in the officers' mess, and as the officers, like everybody else, they got wounded, they got killed, and they went sick. Sometimes, you know, there would be maybe one had gone sick or another had been wounded, and that reduced the strength of your company. You had to get some more officers. Well, I expected to be the commanding officer, he would inform the GHQ that we want the strength officers, and we would notify them that there'd been one wounded or one killed, and there was another one sent out. Well, there used to be an army lorry went to the railhead to meet these officers, do you see? It would go down with this army lorry. And then he would be brought back and brought to the officers' mess and introduced to his brother officers that were there, you know. And it wasn't long before he got the Masonic sign, or he was asked if he was a Mason, because I was a batman at the time, and walking in the officer's mess many times, and I've been in there when he's been asked if he was a Mason. And if he is a Mason, he's one of the lads. Oh, I shook him by the hand. And
what if he
was? Well, they used to say, Clayton, fill him with a whiskey.
What if he
fill him a double whiskey if he was a Mason.
What if he wasn't?
If he wasn't, he had to fiddle for himself. He would. It was a thing I thought wasn't right, and I didn't like it, because sometimes they were quite good fellas, but whether when a Freemason or not, I thought it wasn't right. He had to be shook by the hand and made one of the lads where, if he wasn't a Freemason, he was turned adrift. You see, he was cold-shouldered somehow. He wasn't made the hail fellow well met.
It was just amongst the officers, though.
Oh, yes, amongst the officers, yes, yes.
Right, what you spent your first night in Flamatinge in these dugouts. When were you introduced to the work you were going to do?
Well, we were taken. Oh, there was a NCO took us in hand and led us into the, away from Flamatinge. We got the army lorry to take us up to about the ramparts, the Vipa. That's, we left away from there and had to walk to the trenches from there. And
what do you remember of that first approach to the trenches? Did it make an what do you remember about it?
Oh, we got into the trenches and we were told to keep down. That's one thing that the Masons were always well instructed in. When you got to B4 trench or B5 trench, make a point of keeping well down. There's a sniper walking on there, a German sniper, and we've had some of our men killed there and wounded. But they always seemed to, well, he was one of the lads, if he was a Freemason, by the other Masons, you know. Of course, them, it wasn't Masons. Well, it's a thing that never bothered them at all, I don't suppose, but I used to notice it.
But when your first time in the trench, what were you doing when you got, whereabouts in the front had you gone to?
They got us down into Sanctuary Wood. And when they got us as near to the Germans as they could, we were in the trench, and the officer was with us. He said, "No," he says, "I think we'll start sinking here." Well,